My name's Grace, and I'm an alcoholic. Grace. I'm grateful to be here, grateful to be sober. It's only by God's grace, the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and people like you that have helped me maintain my sobriety a day at a time. That's very important to me. I was born and raised in Los Angeles. I was raised with two older brothers. I was raised old-fashioned. My father was strict. My mom stood home, and my father was a cement mason and plaster. I went to Catholic school. From a very young age, because I wasn't able to do the things that my friends were able to do, I didn't feel like a part of. I went to Catholic school. Academically, I was good when I studied. I was in volleyball. I was almost the best one in tetherball when it was a short, stubby thing. And I used to hit it. I used to have a ball. It was this other girl. You know, I enjoyed sports. And then I was a captain cheerleader. But still, I didn't feel a part of. I started lying at a very young age. I manipulated and I lied. That went on for some time. And then I went to a public school for 1 year. And this girl, I guess she didn't like me. She wanted to fight me, and I was really scared. And, you know, it was crazy. It was really, really crazy. I was raised and with, you know, knowing about God and trying to be the best person that I could possibly be, I thought. And I just was fearful. I was insecure. I felt less than. And I went to Catholic school, and then I dropped out. I met this guy. He was about 7 years older than me. You know, the sick attract the sick. He used to take drugs, and I thought that was okay. Then I was with him in the car, and they had the old English 800, and I took a drink. You know, I was short. My father was tall. My father was 6 feet, 6'2", and my mom was short. So I was short, and when I took a drink, I drank that can really, really fast. And wow. Hello. What's up? You know, seriously. I mean, I felt good. I felt tall. I felt beautiful. I mean, what do you want? You know, and I liked the alcohol. I really did. I liked the effect of the alcohol. The only thing I didn't like is that I drank it so fast I felt a little dizzy. So I continued to drink, and I liked this guy, and we were, you know, getting pretty chummy there. And you know, as I mentioned, my father was really, really strict. I mean, when I would go outside and play, by the time he would come home at 5 o'clock, if I wasn't around, he'd whistle. I could hear him from 2 blocks down the street, and here I come running. You know, I came from a very loving home. My father, I only seen him drink once. My mother didn't drink, but I lost two uncles of alcoholism, you know. And to get back where I was at, I went over my head right now. Anyhow, this guy, I lied to him and told him that I was pregnant because I liked drinking. And he went to go ask for my hand in marriage. And my father agreed on letting me get married. And I was amazed. I was surprised. I had a very nice wedding. I just didn't want my parents to find out that I was drinking because I love the alcohol. I like what it did for me. You know, and I hung around with older women. That marriage really never worked. We were back and forth. I would go back to my parents' house. And I was 16 years old when I got married, and I dropped out of school. So I was drinking pretty heavy then, and I enjoyed it. And I hung around older women so that alcohol could be accessible to me. And there was this friend that had a friend that owned the bar. And man, did I feel like a queen going into the bar. You know, I drank a lot. I loved the alcohol. I mostly drank beer. And then somebody introduced me to J.B. Scotch. And I thought it was like perfume. I didn't like the taste of it, but it didn't take me very long to acquire a taste. I love going into bars. I thought that was the normal thing to do. I was having a lot of fun. I was having joy. I had, at the age of 18, I had a daughter. And at the age of 19, I had a son. And I put those kids through holy hell because I enjoyed drinking. I would love to go into the bars. That's all I ever did. I would have intentions of going with my friend to have a couple of drinks, and I would come out of there blitz. And my kids, I put them through holy hell. If it weren't for my parents that helped me raise my children, they would have been taken away from me. My older brother used to take my kids camping a lot, and he just couldn't believe how I'd love to drink more. I paid more attention to drinking than to my kids. And, you know, and it wasn't funny, but the guys used to say, you know what, it's cheaper to feed her than to booze her, because I had a high tolerance for alcohol. I could drink. I could really, really drink. You know, I would sit at the corner of the bar, and I'd start drinking. I'd start about when I'd get off of work at 6 o'clock and not get out of that bar until 2 o'clock. And the restroom was way over there at the end, so you know that I needed to have enough booze to just walk over there. And I handled booze very, very well. I used to go to the neighborhood bar, the Holloway, the Dive. That's where I felt comfortable. And I was working, and there was numerous times that I would call in sick on Monday. My grandmother would die. I would lie after lie after lie because of the alcohol. You know, it progressively got worse. It never got better. There was times that I went on the wagon, and for any little excuse, I would just start drinking. And that's the way it went for a lot of years. And I used to drive my vehicle drunk. And I would look outside the next day because I was a blackout drinker. And I'd look outside to see if my car was there. I had a nice Grand Prix that my brother had sold me, and it had dents. An alcoholic car. It had a lot of dents. And it was a nice car. I was in a blackout. And I was going down Echo Park Avenue. I wasn't driving my vehicle. A friend of mine was driving the vehicle. I was with two friends. And we were going down Echo Park Avenue. It was about 2 in the morning after we were drinking. I was in a blackout. And a car sideswiped my car, and she pulls over, and I got out of the car, and somebody comes and hits me. And I was in a blackout. I thank God that I had insurance. I went to the hospital. They took me to Queen of Angels, and they didn't have sufficient equipment there for me, so they took me to USC Medical Center. And thank God that I had insurance. My brother investigated and called different doctors, and they transferred me back to Queen of Angels. I was in the hospital for 3 weeks. I had a fractured femur, lacerations all over my face. And for the longest time, I thought that it was the alcohol that made me flexible and I didn't die. Until I came into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and knew that God had saved me. I've always believed in God, but I put him in the back burner when I used to drink. I love to drink. I didn't know any other way of having fun other than drinking, because that's all I knew to do. Anyhow, as I mentioned, I was in the hospital for 3 weeks. I have a Hansen, what you call a Hansen street nail in my femur, in the shaft of my femur. I had two options, either to wear a full cast on one leg and half the other leg, and my leg would have shrunk, or have this surgery. Since I had insurance, they went ahead with the surgery. I had one surgery on a Friday, and then the following week I had to have surgery. A plastic surgeon opened me up from here and puttied up my cheekbone because my eye would have sunken in. And I wanted a beer. I was in the hospital. I was on morphine, and I wanted a drink because I'm an alcoholic. I didn't realize it then, but that's all I knew how to do was drink. So I got out of the hospital. I had to learn how to walk all over again. I went from crutches to a cane, and I limped. And I was going to go back to work. I was off of work for some time, and I would go across. I was at my mother's, staying at my mother's house, and I would go across the street was the party house. They used to do a lot of things there besides drink. There was this guy that was a physical therapist that used to bring Pentothal. And we used to take little sucks of the Pentothal and get a little crazy besides the drinking. And the medication the doctor was giving me, I was drinking. You know, I should have been dead a long time ago. Fortunately, I didn't die, but I would have if I would have continued to drink. And it went like that for a lot of years. This marriage that I was first in, it never worked out. We got a divorce. I started to go out with the bartender. He was a really nice guy, though. He was a really nice guy. He would give me anything I wanted, but he was... And we had a relationship. We moved out together. I was staying at my mom's. He had a camper. He had left his wife, not because of me, but they were having problems. I had nothing to do with that. And he had a camper, and I used to go sleep with him in the camper and leave my kids over there. And at that time, I wasn't taking any birth control. I mean, I didn't want to have any more children. And he says, well, I can't get you pregnant. And I said, well, that's good. He was a lot older than I was. The guy that I was married to was 7 years older, but he broke my heart. Even a year before we were married, he went out and he cheated on me. And my self-esteem was really low, and I figured an older person would have been around the block and he wouldn't hurt me. So... we had a relationship, and all of a sudden we're drinking, and then I started to drink I.W. Harper and beer when I was with my friends, but hard liquor when I was at the bar. And I started to have blood clots just drop out of me. So I go to my doctor. He says, you're having a miscarriage. You need to get to the emergency. So I went to the emergency. And they gave me an ultrasound. The baby was fine. And he asked me, do you drink? I said, maybe a beer or two. I was into denial. And the baby was okay. They didn't know where the bleeding was coming from. As I mentioned, I used to drink hard liquor, and I started to drink beer. Every single day, I would drink a case of beer almost. And I was pregnant. I was selfish, self-centered, and self-absorbed. But before that, let me back up a little bit. I was with this other guy before this guy. And he got in. He was a bartender, too. I love those bartenders because they gave me the booze. And I was drinking one day a lot. And he, for some reason or another, he got fired. Then he started to bookmake. And I was helping him. And I'm the one that got busted. But I didn't snitch on him. I just went ahead and did it. They bailed me out. I was scared. I was scared. Very scared being in jail, locked up, and I was hungover. But I got out at 5 o'clock in the morning. I had a friend come pick me up. And I needed him to go hit the liquor store because I needed a drink. But at the very beginning, when I would have hangovers, I wouldn't drink. There was times that I was hungover and I would drink and I would vomit up the beer. I couldn't hang. I couldn't handle it. I'd drink 2, 3, 4 bottles. And every time I drank, I would hug the toilet bowl. Always. And my mother even told me, Grace, if I would drink like that, I wouldn't drink if I got as sick as you get every morning. But see, I was a sick individual. I didn't realize that I was sick. I didn't realize that I was an alcoholic. But anyhow, getting back to that, the very next day I start drinking, I feel sorry for myself. I call my mom. She gives me some money, and I get popped for a 502. That was way back then. They call them DUIs now. It was a 502 when I got busted. I parked the car right, but I was drunk. And they took me to jail again. But first they took me to... First they took me to the hospital to have a blood test, and I was crying to him, please, it was sick. I was a pathetic person crying out to a police officer, well, I'll give you some money. I mean, you know, trying to bribe this police officer. I mean, who in the heck do I think I am? I was just a drunk. That's what I was. Anyhow, when I used to drink at the bars, I used to make guys believe that I was going to go to bed with them just so that they could feed me alcohol. But I did make up some story or another just so that they could feed me booze. But anyhow, getting back to my pregnancy, I drank through my whole pregnancy. And he was born okay. That was my third child. I had Denise, Ramon, which we call Pee-wee, and Manuel, which I nickname him Boo-Boo. Because he was a little boo-boo, except he didn't know that. He was a precious little thing. And I still continued to drink. And his father was a good father, the bartender. The second one, his name was Manuel also. He didn't have any children, and that was the only child that he had ever had. And he was married twice, just his wives couldn't have children. I became sober 42 days after this young man was born. And I used to live in San Gabriel. And I called my father and mother, because they always supported me in anything that I wanted to do to help me. And I was his little girl. He was strict, but I was his little girl. He loved all his children, but I was the baby. And I wanted to go into a rehab place, and they were going to take care of my kids, except I didn't have insurance at that time. Because I got fired from the job because I chose to drink more than go back to the job. So I got a wrongful termination. I mean, an excessive leave of absence. So I didn't want it to interfere with my drinking. It got to the point where I needed the alcohol to function. I was a real happy drunk, and I loved to drink. It was just kicking my rear end. It had the best of me. But anyhow, I got sober 42 days after he was born. When I called my parents, he was a senior citizen organizer, and he knew about Alcoholics Anonymous, as I mentioned. Excuse me, he had two brothers that died of alcoholism, and he didn't want me to die. So he went out and he bought me a beer because I had a terrible hangover. I was shaking, just shaking. I had to sober up a few days before I went into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you. Excuse me. I had called the central office, and they told me about a meeting that was two blocks away from where I lived. If it would have been any further, I would have never made it to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I went to the meeting. I was scared. And this bartender, he also had another job. He was a work evaluator and used to evaluate mental patients. And I went to a speaker meeting, and he went with me. It was two blocks away, and the person speaking was a priest. And I walked into the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the lady tells me, if you have a court card, place it in the basket. And I said, I don't. And she knew that I was a newcomer, and she put her arms around me. And I felt the love connection immediately. And they told me to sit down and to keep coming back. We'll love you until you learn to love yourself. Keep the plug in the jug. Don't drink between meetings. And she told me, get the big book. And I says, I don't have any money. She goes, that's okay. You can pay us next week when you come back. So for the newcomer, this program does work, as you could see by the birthday celebrants. As this young lady mentioned, become very willing. Be willing to go to any lengths for your sobriety. And that's what they asked me, if I'm willing to go to any lengths. And right away I asked this lady to be my sponsor. And you know, when they would have a break, like you guys have a break, and they would go outside, I didn't know what to expect of Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought they were people with trench coats and unshaven beards like they have in Skid Row. You know, I didn't know. And then when they would go out on a break, I thought that they would have a drink because they would come back with a smile. You know, wow, what are they doing out there? Maybe I better go out there with them. And I was in a fog. I was a puppy with the tail in between my legs. I didn't understand. I didn't comprehend. I thought that my way was the best way, and I realized that it wasn't. And I was on the program for a while. It took me a while because I was really in a fog until I got into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got tired of bumping my head up against the wall. And I got very busy, and I started to go to meetings, and I started to work the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, just like it's outlined in the big book. And I took the steps. I took my fourth and fifth together. Because it's simple in the program the way that it's outlined, but I made it complicated. I was too scared. I was fearful of even writing how I felt. And this man that was living with me told me, why don't you write every day how you feel? I didn't know how to do that. And I wasn't a dingling. Well, I was a dingling because I drank too much. Anyhow, I kept coming back, and I started to go to meetings, and I started to work the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I started to get commitments. Then this sponsor moved away. Then I got another job, and I got another sponsor, and this lady had me working really hard. And she had me going to a lot of meetings, and we used to go to H&I meetings. She was very involved in that. And I would go on panels to Civil Brand, to Biscaloo Center, and I did what I had to do. It wasn't easy at the very beginning. It was hard for me because the only thing I knew how to do was drink. And to me, that was the most enjoyable thing to do. And I started to go outside and look at the beauty that was created. And I started to smell the flowers. And I started to work on the yard and pull some weeds. And this young man sitting, my baby, Manuel, was sitting there on a bar stool in the kitchen. And he goes, Mommy, how about me? I was going to a lot of meetings. I was going to work. I was go to meetings. And when he said that, I got very involved with him because he was a tiger cub to a Boy Scout. I became a Weebelo's den leader to help my son so that they could get focused. Because when they're Cub Scouts, all they do is play on the floor and mess up their uniform. And all they do, no really, is they roll around. That's what you get their uniform, and they're expensive. But anyhow, I became a Weebelo's den leader. I became a Weebelo's den leader, and I love to motivate people. I really do. And what I did is I got a board, and the Weebelo's that I was in charge of, every end of the month we would have a pack meeting, and we would have activity badges. And I would get a picture in the computer pertaining to the activity badge, and I would put it there, and they would get really, really excited. And then I went into Boy Scouts, and then I got another job, and this fellowship is so beautiful. I'm so grateful, and I thank God that I made it to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I could have died out there drinking. The accident. I tried to commit suicide twice because I wanted attention. And yet I had the attention of my parents. But I was nuts. You know, I was very sick. I was sick. I was a sick individual. The program, what I know today is what I learned in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was taught that you get into action. Because I used to talk a lot, procrastinate, and be very inconsistent. And today I'm a little bit more consistent, and I do get into action. Anyhow, my son made it across the bridge, and he was a Boy Scout. Then I got married, and he didn't want to move up to the country because I live in Hamu. And I asked my older daughter to move into the apartment. I never had to worry about my son because he was a San Gabriel Police Explorer. He was 17 years old. He had a head on his shoulders. And he grew up in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that I was able to be a mother to him. Because my other two children are selfish and self-centered because that's the way I was. Alcohol came first in my life. My children were secondary. But him, I made him number one. And I got very involved with him. And I moved to Hamul, and he didn't want to move to a rural area. But I never had to worry about him. When I moved to Hamul, I became a little complacent in the program. And I don't suggest that for anybody. I didn't have to drink. And I started to go to the Malady meeting, and I met Ted Hall. And he saw that I needed some help. And he sponsored me. And if anybody knows Ted Hall, he shot straight from the hip. And he loved the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I would go to meetings here, and he would hand me the microphone all the time because I became complacent in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he wanted me to share that because I didn't have to go out and drink. And I got very involved again. And what I would do is go to my meetings, and then on Thursday and Friday I would go help my son because at that time he was working on his Eagle Scout project. So I would go and help him. He was my pride and joy. I really loved this son a lot. My son moved with me for 2 years to here in Hamu. He was a good young man. He was FEMA disaster certified. He was an Eagle Scout. He was a police explorer. He was going to be a police officer. He helped the Mid-City Young Marines, and he helped the veterans because I'm very involved in the veterans. It's only because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that I am an auxiliary president. And I don't say that to be egocentric. I say that because I'm a responsible person today. I can suit up and show up. And I'm more consistent. And we work chairmanships. And that's because of you people that have taught me to be a better person. And I like who I am today sometimes. I could be a little witch at times. And a bee with a niche. And it's hard for me to practice this at home with my husband, but you know what? I'm trying a lot harder, and Ted would tell me, keep your mouth shut. And you know, and I would. But sometimes I couldn't. And then they told me a long time ago in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, sweetheart, you only have one butt and you're sitting on it. You know, Getting back to Manuel. My son had two jobs. He was armed security. His boss didn't work with him. His boss didn't work with him on his schedule. As a matter of fact, he asked them. He was working during the day, and at night he was working like six or seven or maybe 9 o'clock to 4 o'clock in the morning. And he asked this man if he would work with him on his schedule, and he didn't. He took a day away from him. So he didn't ask him anymore. My son was driving home one night, and he was extremely tired. It was his second shift. And he went off the embankment on Skyline Truck Trail. He died. It came out in the news on February the 22nd of 09. And I didn't feel his death, because a mother usually feels when something happens. And his friend, his good friend, was staying at the house. And he was nervous and worried. And I wasn't. I left Manuel a message, and he was very good about calling me back. And he wouldn't return the call, so I figured he's done this before. He went to go sleep at Home Depot, which was his other job as security. And he fell asleep in the car, and he went to work. And his friend was awfully nervous, so he tells me to get ready, and we start looking for Manuel. So we go down the other street, going further east and south, and then we go by Skyline Truck Trail. And he tells me, park right here. And I start going down and looking down, and my son, I found him. I found him with his head sticking out a little bit of the car, and the car was wrecked, and it was a little Ford Focus. And I screamed. I wanted to take a drink right there and then, because I didn't want to feel the pain. I told his friend, go and revive him. And some man heard me screaming, and he runs and he goes all the way down. So his friend Jeremiah went down too. And I tell him, revive him, and he didn't want to turn around and look at me and tell me that my son was dead. So he does turn around, and he goes. I was in shock. I started to call my family, and I called somebody from the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was screaming, bloody murder. And then the sheriff was asking me questions, and all I kept doing was drinking water, but I answered his questions. And I told them that I wanted to see my son, and they didn't want to let me. When they finally brought him up, he was in a black bag, and all I could do was hug him. But you know what? I didn't have to drink. You people helped me through this. You people were there for me. The people from the Great Fat Group kept calling me and telling me they love me. And I had a registered nurse that lived in the back, and I was in shock, and she gave me an anxiety pill because I was in a lot of shock. And I took it at night, and I took it for 3 days, and I said, you know what, I don't want this. I have to feel the feelings. My daughter and my son and my grandkids came, and my daughter handled everything for me because I couldn't. And it's going to be 4 years since my son passed away. And it would have been his birthday on the 17th of April. So from January to about May, I'm not, it's hard. It's hard when you lose a child. And I have to pass by there every single day, by where he went off of the road. And my older son and my daughter and my grandkids went over the area, and we prayed that I would have comfort every time I go by there.
I know that we all have trials and tribulations. But I don't want to die if I drink, and I know that if I drink, I'll die. Sobriety is more important to me than going out to drink, because I don't know if I take a drink, I don't know if I'll have a comeback. It's only because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the unconditional love that's in these rooms and working with people. What I do to get out of self is to work with other people. I'm very involved in my church. I'm very involved in the auxiliary, trying to do what we can for the veterans. And I work with people. And that helps me get out of grace, because I don't want to stay in the problem. I want to get to the solution. This is a matter of life and death, and life is in session. And you don't have to do this alone. I always thought I had to do this alone. What you can't do alone, we could do together. And just like this young lady said, get someone to help you. Don't walk out of here and go take a drink. Talk to somebody. Get some phone numbers. Get involved in the meetings. Get a commitment. We all care. Alcoholism is a killer. It'll kill you. When I was in San Gabriel, there was this guy that had 27 years and he shot his brains out. And there's people that commit suicide, which affects the people that are still here. And it's painful, especially if they're your friends or they're a loved one. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was nervous when I came over here, but you know what? I'm talking to, we all have the same common denominator, and if it weren't for people telling me, you're going to be okay. I was going to be funny and saying, is there anything for, I lost my train of thought. But that's okay. As long as I keep coming back, it doesn't matter. You know, I'm still a little crazy. A friend of mine told me that the difference between an alcoholic and a normal person is that the alcoholic admits they're crazy and they're trying to get help. The normal person hasn't yet realized that they're crazy. And I live with a normie. But he's a nice person. Sometimes he does the things that I want him to do. But you know, he is a nice person. He knows that I'm very involved in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. He's a veteran. He's involved in the Veterans to Foreign Wars. And you know, as I mentioned before, the hardest place to practice these principles is at home. It is so hard at home. I could come out of a meeting and be spiritual, and then I get home. But he's doing better. And so am I. Yeah. I keep my mouth shut more often. And you know what? He asked me once. He goes, what if it were the other way around? I said, I wouldn't like it. So I have to look at myself in the mirror and tell myself that I love myself and that he needs to be treated with dignity and respect. And I'm a neat freak, and he's not. And you know what? I don't care anymore, because he's alive. And I could pick up after him. I could wash and I could iron and I don't cook anymore, but I know how to cook. I'm too busy, and it's good for me to be busy. He cooks. Everything's electric up there, and I don't like electric, but I do cook once in a while. But I am a very clean person, and I do iron, and I wash, and I keep the house clean. And I'll even help them outside in the yard, which is 5 acres, and it's a lot of work. And somebody shared something at our meeting on Thursday, and it was very profound to me. And that's why, even more so, I try to be a lot nicer to my husband, because he'll do anything to make me happy. And you know, if your wife is happy, everything's happy. You'll be content. Seriously. You keep your wife happy, everything will be fine. Financially, we're going through financial stuff, but you know what? I'm grateful for the things that I do have. I'm grateful for the program of alcoholics. I'm grateful for you people. And if it weren't for you, I wouldn't have the opportunity to be up here sharing my experience, strength, and hope with you. And I love you guys. Thank you for letting me share.